And now, The Low Post.
Welcome to The Low Post podcast, social distancing version, whatever this is. This continues, and I am very excited to be joined after some technical difficulties that are apparently this is just how we live now, by Wizards All-Star shooting guard Bradley Beal. How are you?
I'm doing well, Zach. How you doing?
I'm hanging in. So I'm going to open by giving you the floor because I am one of the idiots who left you off my All-Star roster this year. Yeah. And I got a talking to from your agent about it. And then you proceeded to score like 1,000 points every single game after that. So the floor is yours. Tell me why I was wrong and how angry were you about not making – you looked very angry about not making the All-Star team. You played angry.
I was angry, but I won't say I played – I didn't say I played angry because of that. At the end of the day, I want to make the playoffs. Like, the All-Star game was what it was. And I'm not mad at you for your votes because, for me, I'll never take that moment away from the other 24 guys, you know, because that was me 2 years ago and a year ago. You know, so I can't sit here and take that moment away from Jason Tatum, you know, and Donovan Mitchell and guys who got their first one, you know. So I can't sit here and do that. But for sure, I feel like I deserved it. I feel like my numbers and the way I was playing and the impact that I had on my team, you know, showed that I should have been an All-Star. And I think players around the league showed that. I think the fact that the players voted me to actually start in the game itself was the sign itself that I should have been one. But, you know, I didn't let it, you know, break me. Like, I just continued to work and, you know, I always continue to do that.
When did you become – did you start thinking about – I think if the season ends now or currently where we are, you're averaging 30.5 points per game, I think. Mm-hmm. Over 30, that's just badass if you can average 30. When did you – did you become aware of that at one point and did it become something you cared about?
You know, it's so funny because my trainer and I, Drew Hanlon, about 2 years ago, two summers ago, we were sitting in a gym and we were trying to figure out how to get an All-Star game. That's what we were trying to do. You know, we were trying to figure out how to take our game to that level of being, you know, an All-Star, you know, how to be a star in the league. And, you know, I feel like we made those strides, we made those steps. And then we were actually sitting there and I asked Drew, I said, do you think it's realistic for me to average 30? And he said, yes and no. He was like, he's like, yes and no, honestly. And that's why I love Drew, because he's a straight shooter. He's going to be honest with me. So he's like, yes and no. He's like, I feel like there's areas in your game that you need to improve on in order to even get to 30. You know, you need to get to the line more. You need to probably shoot more threes, you know, which is all stuff I've been doing. So, it's crazy because 2 years ago we sat in the gym and asked ourselves, was it possible? And we left the conversation saying yes. And so for the last 2 years, that was actually my goal, was to try to average 30 a game. And sure enough, like midway through the year, I started finding ways to make it easier for me to score. And sure enough, it was, look, I'm looking at 30 a game.
I mean, the scoring was coming so easy to you. Like, you would get in the middle of the second quarter and, Brad's got 20 already. This is going to be another 40-point game. I'm going to look like a moron again for the 12th day in a row for not putting him in the All-Star game. So you're at 30.5. If the season comes back, you now have to average 30. You have to go, like, even if you just sit out, you have to average 30. So my question is this, though. Like, you guys are in ninth right now, but I think it's a pretty distant ninth. So how does a player, like, how do you conceive of, like, is it really worth it for me to come back after, like, a 2 or 3 month layoff for 5 games when our chances of making the playoffs with 5 games remaining are pretty close to zero? Like, do you want to do that? Is there some physical risk in that for you?
Oh, for sure. You know, it's always – I mean, especially now, you know, because we haven't been doing anything for, hell, a month going on to who knows how long, you know. So I think ultimately, not even just me, I think that plays a factor for everybody in the league. Like, I don't think anybody can just come back and go from 0 to 100, you know, and, you know, pick up right where we left off. It's going to be some bad basketball if that's the case, you know. So for us, sitting in a position we're in, yeah, it's tough. You know, I'm always optimistic, you know me. I'm always going to feel like, you know, we can do it, you know, but eventually reality will, you know, settle. And, you know, and I think when that time happens, I think we'll look at it and the organization will probably figure out what's best, you know, moving forward, whether they want the young guys to get the minutes and, you know, improve and get the experience or not. But, you know, for me, I always want to compete and play, you know, so, it's a blessing for me during this time because I actually have a gym in my house. So I can, I'm still getting my shots up and getting my work in the weight room. So hopefully I can pick up right where we left off if we do resume the season.
Yeah, I feel like every max or like everyone making over $20 million in the NBA who doesn't have a gym in their house is now the first thing they're going to do when this is over is build a gym just in case. Because I think someone told me like Giannis doesn't have a gym or like there are some super duper stars who don't have gyms. Like, dude, what are you doing? Like Steph Curry's putting up a hoop in his backyard. Like, what are you doing, man? Build a gym. You know,
it's funny because Mark, right before I bought this house, Mark was like, why do you need a gym here? House. Why? She's like, you have a whole practice facility, you know, that's what it's for. You know, your house is to get away from all of that. And I was like, yeah, but I really love the house. And, you know, and sure enough, he texted me like 2 days later, oh man, it was the smartest investment you ever made. Like
there you go.
And so now it's paying off for me. So, you know, it's definitely a blessing and a curse in his case because I will overuse it if it gets out of hand. For sure.
So, it's been a tough couple of years for the Wizards, tons of injuries, some turnover at the top of the organization. I don't think until maybe a couple weeks before you signed that extension before the season, I think most people would have bet against you signing the extension given the direction of the franchise. Why did you come back? The easiest thing for you to do would have been like, I'm in the prime of my career. The team's not going the direction I want. I will be the single most appealing trade chip on the market this year. Let's do it. Let's just get me out of here. Why did you extend?
Exactly what you just said. That was the easy way. That was – granted, it looks great, but who's to say it's a guarantee on the other side, you know? And for me, the whole summer last year, I just kept playing devil's advocate on both sides, like – if I stay, what are the positives and negatives? If I leave, what are the positives and negatives? And ultimately, I feel like staying, the positives outweighed me leaving. And the reason being is because I had more control here. You know, I have an organization who basically gave me the keys. You know, we're going to help. We're going to build around you. We're going to get guys around. Like, if I go anywhere else, granted, it may be a good team, but I would be a piece, you know. I would, you know, who knows if my role would be the same. You know, my role here is I love what it is. I love Brooks. I love what we have. I love our young guys, you know. And I think the fact that we actually have guys who are committed to getting better, you know, granted, we were top five in offense. You know, our problem is we just can't guard a grandma. So
yeah, it was a little ugly at times.
It was real ugly. So, you know, biggest thing was just, you know, how do we get better on that end? And I think throughout the year, we've done that. We've shown glimpses of it, but I think it was just an experience thing at the end of the day. We just had to, you know, we had young guys who were talented and we have, you know, vets who've helped out a lot tremendously throughout the year, but it was just a few plays here and there that we just couldn't piece together. And I think being able to make some moves this offseason and getting John back, I think that fills a lot of those gaps that we had.
There has been now for 5 years, 6 years, just endless noise of do Brad and John get along? Can they coexist on the court? And I just read a Players Tribune piece you wrote maybe a year ago saying, I read all that stuff. I heard all that stuff about can me and John coexist. I read it. I banked it. I put it in my brain for motivation. But, like, what's the truth? Did you and John ever have issues, disagreements? Like, was there ever anything to it?
No, I honestly think it was something the media stirred up, and I think we allowed it to kind of affect us in a way. You know, I think – I won't say affect us, but I think we allowed it to kind of enter our realm. You know, it was noise that was noticeable. You know, we couldn't ignore it. Mm-hmm. You know, so eventually got to the point to where we actually had a conversation. Like, do you have a problem with me? No. Do you have a problem with me? No.
So, okay.
And that's what it was. You know, it was enough of the, you know, oh, he's saying this, he feels this way, like if we have a problem, we're both grown men. We're not going anywhere, you know. So we it's either two things. It's either we're either going to be, you know, childish about it and, you know, continue to, you know, avoid each other, not talk, and, you know, kind of let whoever stirred it up, and or be men about it and, you know, figure out how we can be better as players and as men moving forward. And it was just kind of weird how it all came about. But, you know, to this day, even when I was back in high school, I've known John. John, the first time I've ever met him was at an EYBL tournament my 17th year in L.A. And ever since that day, I got his number after one of my games and stayed in contact with him. 2 years later, I get drafted to the Wizards and I'm his teammate. So, like, we were close way before I've even gotten to the league. And even now, like, he's a big brother to me, you know, and he's taken me under his wing since day one. And, you know, we're still like that to this day. We're both alpha dogs. Like, we both feel like we're winners. We both want to take the shot at the end of the game. Like, that's just how we are. But at the end of the day, I think we both trust each other. I know that I wouldn't be who I am without him. And I think he wouldn't be part of who he is without me either. So I think we both have that understanding.
The other reason that the extension was maybe surprising, I forgot to ask this earlier, was if you had made all NBA this year, you could have been eligible for that Supermax deal again. And by the way, I might have left you off my All-Star roster this year, but I voted you all NBA last year, and that matters. That actually that's the big one. That's the big one. So I'm always wondering, like, do your players and their agents sitting there discussing the Supermax and all the mechanics in this? Like you are having an all NBA level season. Guys on non-playoff teams don't often make all NBA, but I think you have a case for one of the six guard spots. Did you just think the guaranteed money is good enough? I don't need to worry about the Supermax. Did you think if we're not going to be good this year, I'm not going to have a chance to make all NBA at all? Like, did you just not care about, you know, giving up that opportunity?
It was like I said before, I played a little bit of devil's advocate with everything. You know, we knew what was at stake. We knew, you know, the possibilities of me making it, me not making it. I'm confident in myself. Like, we were damn near to the wire with our decision of, you know, signing or not, because I did believe in myself and, you know, making an NBA team next year, regardless if, you know, we were going to, you know, we were in the state we're in, you know. Yeah. I was a little naive to how good we would be coming into the year. Like, I'm always going to be that way. I always feel like whatever team I'm on, whoever we have, like, we're going to make the best of what we got and we're going to compete. So, but I did believe that I could make all NBA. I think for me, it was just the beauty in knowing that I still had flexibility in signing, even being in quote unquote my prime. Like, I still feel like I'm maybe a year or two removed from my prime, but, you know, being able to extend for 2 years or a year and then two more, like, I feel like that's a comfortable decision for both parties, you know, given, you know, the direction of our team. So, I think it was just the best business move that we made, you know, and if, you know, the max is what it is, you know, if I get it, I get it. I don't. And on top of that, we both know there's no guarantee that he would, you know, I could have gotten it, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, it was, and then we would have ran into a problem if that would have happened. So,
yeah.
So we are where we are, and I'm happy I signed. But you're right. I definitely pondered on it for sure.
Let's do some Wizards greatest hits. Did you and Isaiah Thomas during your time together this year discuss and or talk trash about the 2017 Boston Washington playoff series?
Often. That was often the conversation.
Yeah.
Often. Yeah.
That was a great series.
I'm still salty about that for sure. That still hurts. I
mean, look, that losing game seven hurts. It doesn't matter if, you know, like, it hurts.
It hurts, for sure. But, yeah, we talked about it a lot. He killed us. He gave us 50 games.
Yep. Whose idea was it to dress in black for the first regular season game when you guys did that against Boston? That was – everything about that series was so much fun. That was your idea, right?
Yeah.
Would you ever do it again?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay.
Yeah. It's kind of weird with Boston now. It's not the same dynamic of anymore. Granted, I can rival against my brother Jason, but it's not the same no more. With no IT, you know, no Jay. They had a scrappy team.
You guys, I give you credit. You guys have never been shy about proclaiming how good you think you are, and to the point that you I think you and John both said, you know, we think the Cavs ducked us in the 2016 in the 2017 playoffs. Do you ever regret? Did you ever regret lighting a little fire under LeBron? Because he made some big shots again. Remember that overtime game that year where he hit that fadeaway going out of bounds? That was incredible.
Yeah, on me. Yeah, he hit it right over the top of me. I should have fouled him. But you know what? No, because that's who we are. That's how we are. You know, I feel like at the end of the day, it's a competitive league. Like we're out here to compete. You know, just like these guys are. Hell, we won a championship just like they do. So, and we know that. We're not saying they ducked us, but we felt like that year we matched up very well with Cleveland versus any other team because we have the size, you know. And I feel like we could have put a lot of guys. Granted, nobody can really stop LeBron, but I feel like we could have beat him up a little bit that year, at least a little bit.
I have to say, I'm not saying this because you're on the podcast. I've said this before. I actually think because the Wizards are the Wizards and they were bad for so long and there's always stuff happening that I actually think you guys have been an underrated playoff team since you got there, since you and John got there. Like, first of all, I know no one in the league, to the point you guys are making about Cleveland, no one in the league is excited to play Wall and Beal in the playoffs. Like, when they see you on the – coming up on the series, like, oh, man, those are two star players. Like, that's just a pain in the ass to deal with. 2014, you bully the Chicago Bulls and take the Pacers to six games in the last year that the Pacers were good. The next year, you destroy the Raptors. You almost ended the Raptors, like, ended it. And then you're up 2-1 on the Hawks with John. So that series, that was the Paul Pierce called game series. Like, do you look back on that as it would have been a fun year to go to the conference to actually beat that 60-man Hawks team?
You know what? Those 2 years, it was crazy. I would say 3 out of the 4 years I was in the playoffs, we could have made it to the Eastern Conference Finals. Like like you said, we took Indiana to six. Indiana was tough that year for sure. And then the next year, like you said, we beat Toronto and then Atlanta. That one was a heartbreaker because in game two, we missed a rebound and Al Horford had a game winner on a little tip in, like a little floater.
I think that was game five. I think that was game five. Put them up 3-2.
It was. So we lost that game and That was kind of a heartbreaker for us because we were on the road and we would have won that. We were definitely confident going back home to close it out. So that year, then we had a bad year. I think it was we had Toronto in the first round. I think Toronto got us in six games.
When they were rolling a little bit, that 2015 year. What was it like having Paul Pierce on your team? Did you learn from Paul Pierce? I mean, he had all those great playoff shots too that year.
I think the biggest thing that I've learned to respect about Pete Pierce is that I've always thought he was an a-hole, like playing against him. For real, I thought he was an ass playing against him. Like, I thought he was like the biggest trash talker, probably the most disrespectful player I've ever seen.
Love it.
But then when I was his teammate, he was the most fun, lovable guy you can ever imagine. Like, he's the greatest teammate, the greatest leader. He's all about his team. You know, he's all about his guys. And I think that's one thing I loved and admired about him. Even at his, you know, late in his career, he was still in the gym working on his regimen, putting in his craft, working on his step back, the pump fake, all that. Like, he was getting into work. And it was amazing to be able to play for him for a year. And then his game went off the glass.
Off the glass.
Off the glass. He called games. That was –
And then he hit the three to tie the last game that was waved off because it was just after the buzzer.
Oh, man. Oh, yeah. People forget about that one.
Yeah. I'm telling you that, like, this is my – I guess what I'm saying in the big picture is you guys have been, I think, a better playoff team than a regular season team. Like, regular season, you always seem to scuffle along to 45, 46, 47 wins. And then in the playoff, I don't know why, but that seems
– I mean, you know – You understand this. You gotta pick up your play. You know, we know that. You know, nobody wants to go home swept, you know, especially when you're playing at home. You know, you want to, everybody wants to win those games. That's the crazy thing about the Boston series, is that nobody won a road game.
I didn't remember that. Is that true?
Yeah.
No, but it's the home team won all seven games.
Home team won all seven games.
That's right. That's right. Now I'm remembering that. That's right. What are your early impressions of Rui Hachimura?
I love Rui. It's crazy because his ceiling is high. And it was funny because when everybody was making like the Kawhi comparisons on draft night, people laughed. And hell, I even laughed because I'm like, Kawhi is a damn superstar. Like, let's, like Rui played the four. When we got him, when I seen him in the summer, he was dribbling. He's putting the ball on the floor, bringing the ball to the floor, palming it one hand. So I can see where they were making the comparisons to Kawhi. Like he's not Kawhi, but he plays like him. And I was like, well, he has a high ceiling. Like, he's not really a four. We can really make him into a three. We can make him into a playmaker. Like, he can post those smaller guys. He can guard big guys. Like, he's very versatile in a lot of ways. I think his ceiling is high. I love him. You know, he's a workhorse. And I don't know who he's really, really comparable to because his ceiling is that high.
I liked him this year. I think I'm putting him on my second team all rookie. I think he had a nice solid year for you guys. Yeah. Do you ever have shooting contests with Bertans in practice?
Yeah, we shoot every day. That's practice. Contests. He has shooting. He used to shoot with IT all the time. They used to have contests.
I love IT, but there's no way he's winning those shooting contests against Bertans.
I see one of you. Bertans won the majority. Rui would jump in every now and then. We would force Rui to jump in with us.
It's not going to work out for Rui.
You know what? Rui would blow it at the end. Like, he would get off to a hot streak and then get cold at the end. And, you know, once Bertans see one go in, it's over with. Bertans only has, you know, he has four fingers, essentially. Like, he has a nub. On his shooting hand. Think about that.
Did you ever watch games this year where you're like, dude, this guy is just jacking anytime he touches the ball, but like they're going in.
Yeah. I've even said something to him about it. I was like, bro, you just shoot the most craziest shots. So coach, you just shoot the craziest shots. It's like, yeah, but they go in. It's like, you're right. I can't say nothing about it. They are going in. So he's a terrific shooter.
Everyone who's been around you laud your work ethic. That Players Tribune story, you had a wonderful anecdote about how your dad would ask you if you're still hungry every day. You still hungry? I'm still hungry. How important was that in getting over all the stress reactions and leg issues you were having? Because there was a point in your career where you were like almost in the Steph Curry range of different injury, obviously, but like, is he ever going to get healthy? Like, is that just totally gone? Like, your legs are totally fine. You don't feel any of that stuff?
Yeah, I don't feel none of it. And it's been like that the last, 4 years, going on five?
Yeah, it's a long time now.
Yeah, it's been a long time. So, like you said, man, the first, I would say, 4 years of my career, that's what I've been battling. Like, everybody's all, he's injury prone. You know, can he play a full 82? And I feel like once I signed my deal, that's when I've like flipped my whole mindset of, okay, you got to stay healthy, and whatever that looks like, you know, lifting in the off season, sticking to your regimen. Like, that's what I did. Got my routine, stuck to it every single day. And still to this day, I'm on it, and knock on wood, I haven't had any problems since. And, it was just so funny now that, back when, you know, I was being quote unquote injury prone and sitting out games, like, I was labeled injury prone and, you know, this guy who can't stay on the floor. But now in today's world, we have load management and we have guys sitting out, and the narrative flipped on it. And it's like, it is so weird to me because I was getting bashed for this years ago for sitting out for, you know, my leg may be bothering me, or for sitting out for precautionary reasons. Now we do that like it's normal. And that's just so weird to be bashed for that years ago, and now we just flipped the whole narrative.
Wizards or Bullets?
Bullets.
Got to be Bullets, right?
Yeah.
It'll never happen for reasons that are obvious, and we all know that, but it's a much cooler name. It's a much cooler name.
Oh, man. Thank you, Gil. But yes.
Talk to me about your your work with the Ron Brown College Prep School, because that's something I didn't know much about, and I started researching it and I started looking into it. And this seems like more than even a typical NBA player charity project. This seems like a legitimate part of your life. So tell me about school, what drew you to it, and what you're doing.
It's a college prep school. So it's Ron Brown College Prep. It's a publicly funded private school. So they get public funding, and, you know, but they have basically the criteria of a private school. So their school is tough. And for me, I went to a college prep school in St. Louis. And granted, this school is in inner city DC, so it's predominantly black. So these kids, for me, I wanted to make sure that they understood the true opportunity that they had in front of them. Like, I went to a private all-white school in St. Louis from 6 through 12. And the only way that I was making it is if I paid $20,000 a year or if I had an academic scholarship. And so I think I went with plan B. I got an academic scholarship. I had a 4.0 ever since I went to this school. And so
I believe you finished with the 3.9 because you got a couple of B's in at the end, and you regret it forever.
You're right. Senior year, I skipped some. It was like the McDonald's game, Jordan game. So I ended up missing.
Senior year, you're done. It's fine.
Senior year. Yeah, I was out of there. But so the school, it's a college prep school, just like I went to. I just wanted to make sure that they had the same, understand that they had a grand opportunity in front of them, you know, because I had to potentially pay my way through school. Granted, I didn't, because I wanted to be smart enough to where I didn't have that stress on my parents. But, you know, throughout the year, I just continued, the last 3 years rather. For one, it's a brand new school. So they've only been open. This is their fourth year. So this is their first year having seniors. And so I've been building a relationship with these guys since they were freshmen, and it's pretty cool to be able to see them.
That's great.
You know, migrate through their last couple of years of high school. And now this year I've actually planned some college tours for the seniors, you know, to go to some different HBCUs around the city, Howard, Hampton, different other schools around the area, the DMV area, Morgan State, different ones. You know, just to give them the idea of, and, you know, just to kind of give them a little push to let them know that college is right here in their grasp. There are plenty of schools in the area that would take them, that would love them, that they have an opportunity to succeed at, whether it's academically or, you know, in the sports realm. So for me, it was just trying to be a mentor as much as I possibly could, helping the basketball team, providing gear for them. I'm helping actually right now during this time, I'm buying the school about 50 to 100 laptops so the seniors can finish their senior year. So I'm just trying to give them some light, man, trying to share gems as much as possible, trying to uplift these young men, you know, to be great, to be who they want to be, and know that, let them know as possible.
I think that's the coolest kind of thing someone in your position can do, is something where you stick in the lives of these kids for multiple years, like stuff that's not a one-off or a visit. Last question, and I'll let you go. I meant to ask you this earlier. I have to know this. I have to. Okay, I don't work for a team. I never worked for a team, so I don't know. I'm not inside. I don't know how common this is. But you had this, every team in a span of 5 years will have one infamous practice that gets into the media. So you had the practice two seasons ago where John is mouthing off at Scotty. You're allegedly saying, I'm sick of this stuff. I'm sick of this stuff. So, like, how bad was it? And, like, how unusual was it? What actually happened?
That one was bad. That one was bad. And we're definitely upset that it got out, because it was that bad.
Everything gets out, man. It's unbelievable how this stuff gets out.
Yeah. It was bad, but it's great that, you know, we're all on good terms. That was definitely an over emotional day. Like, everybody got into it that day. Like,
I forgot Jeff Green was involved. Like, every character on your team was involved. I forgot.
Yeah. Yeah, it was one of them days. Every team has them. Let's say that. Every team has them.
Yeah.
Every team has them. Everyone gets out, which are the great teams. The great teams do that. But we're bad at that. We let all of our mess get out. We got to be better at that.
Well, to go from that to signing the extension is an interesting and happy transition. You've got to go. Thank you for joining us. good luck making all NBA, which, just to remind you, I voted you all NBA last year. So just FYI on that, just to get the reminder out. Congrats on a great season and a great career so far. And like you said, I mean, you're still, people forget how young you are. You were in the playoffs like 20, 21 years old. So I hope John gets healthy. I hope we get to see this team take a big step next year, because it's fun when you guys are good. The fans down there are craving it. So good luck, and thanks for the time.
My man, thank you. Thanks for having me.